Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Trouble with Trauma, The Search to Discover How Beliefs Become Facts, by Michael Scaringa, M.D. Narrated by Stephen R. Thorne. Publisher's Note: Our books represent the experiences and opinions of their authors only. Every effort has been made to ensure that events, institutions, and statistics presented in our books as facts are accurate and up to date. To protect their privacy, the names of some of the people, places, and institutions in this book may have been changed. Introduction. Imagine the situation 500,000 years ago of an adolescent prehistoric male walking through the woods when he hears rustling in the grass. What does the sound mean? The gears of his mind unconsciously whirl into action and make a decision. It could mean a poisonous snake, or it could be just the wind. If he believes it is a snake, he takes protective measures and survives another day. He will live to pass his genes on to another generation that will share his safety instinct. If, on the other hand, he believes it is just the wind, but it turns out to be a poisonous snake, he runs the risk of being bitten, dying, and losing the opportunity to pass his genes on. The odds are thus slightly in favor of genes for believing in danger when danger might not exist being passed on, while genes for ignoring danger signals would die out. One could argue that if the human species is to survive, we must believe rustling sounds might be snakes. The leadership in the White House of the United States witnessed attacks on American soil by foreign terrorists on September 11, 2001, that killed 2,977 people. What did that mean for the future safety of Americans? The leadership had a longer time to react than the prehistoric adolescent, but they too had to make a decision eventually about how to react. If they reacted forcefully and powerfully at the right place and time, they might stave off future terrorist attacks. The American citizens they were required to protect would be safe. If, on the other hand, they reacted too weakly when more attacks were imminent, they ran the risk of being attacked again. The odds for being safe favored reacting forcefully. One could argue they had to attack someone or something, but the terrorists did not come from one clear physical location. The story of how the American leadership settled on attacking the country of Iraq, which had nothing to do with the September 11th attacks, and convincing the American public of the need to do so, is at the most fundamental level a story of how the human mind believes what it needs to believe for safety and status. During the 20th century, doctors, psychologists, and a range of other advocates realized the massive scope of maltreatment and violence that was routinely perpetrated on children and women. What did that realization mean for the safety of our most vulnerable tribe mates? The advocates had an even longer time to react than the leadership in the White House, but alas, they too had to make decisions about how to react. Through their efforts, laws to prevent or punish acts of victimization against children and women became nationalized, common, and government-funded for the first time in history. In 1874, citizens formed the New York Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. In the 1960s, every state enacted mandated reporter laws, which legally require professions that interact frequently with vulnerable populations to report observed or suspected abuse. In 1974, the United States Congress passed the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act that provided funds for states to develop child protective agencies. In 1994, the U.S. Congress passed the Federal Violence Against Women Act. Most states in the United States have specific laws that criminalize domestic violence and additional laws to provide resources for domestic violence victims. But progress to rid the world of child maltreatment, sexual assault, and domestic violence hit a wall. As of 2012, national survey data indicated a steady decline in physical abuse and sexual abuse in the U.S. over the previous two decades. Sexual abuse had declined by 62% since 1990, while physical abuse had declined by 56%. But it was also estimated that 46 out of 10,000 children were still being physically abused each year, and 37 per 10,000 were still being sexually abused. Worse yet, when using a broader definition that encompassed violence, crime, and victimization, a national survey published in 2005 estimated that 53% of children experienced a physical assault each year in the United States. While many new protections had been put into place and had brought about significant improvements, it looked as though the public health prevention and policy strategies were only ever going to go so far. Advocates began to realize they did not have a powerful enough message that could get them to the front of the line for all the resources it would take to prevent all these problems. New laws and new programs were needed to support investigative teams, committees, task forces, public awareness campaigns, and prosecutions of offenders to activate everyone in the village. All of these required funding, and the tap was not open wide enough, and it was never going to be wide enough if something did not change. There was no snake in the grass that could focus everyone's attention and bring them together to do more. Then, something remarkable happened to change all of that. Stakeholders discovered a single problem they could point the finger at that nearly everyone could believe in. They discovered their Iraq in the work of Vincent Folletti, M.D., and his study on adverse childhood experiences, ACE. They combined this message with other research on post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, to create a narrative that psychological trauma permanently damages the human brain. With a clearly defined enemy, psychological trauma, that was physically toxic to the human brain and possibly other important organs, they had the poisonous snake that could perhaps finally get everyone's attention. Since then, the toxic stress message has been used to indoctrinate clinicians and researchers to believe that it is real. It has been used to persuade government agencies and professional organizations to endorse and create programming around it. It has been used to dupe state and national legislatures into passing resolutions affirming its existence and to leverage city governments to fund new social programs. It is perhaps the first instance of weaponizing modern neuroscience to try to shape society according to ideological beliefs. While many, if not most, scientists, clinicians, and stakeholders in these fields now believe, or at least believe there is a strong possibility, that stress can permanently damage brains, the problem is that none of it is true. How did this happen? Humans are belief engines. From prehistoric man guessing at the source of rustling in the grass, to leaders in the White House wondering how to protect American citizens, to humanitarian clinicians strategizing how to help disadvantaged populations, we form beliefs and sort out the facts later if needed, or maybe never. Beliefs need the possibility of being true to give them authenticity. Much of the foundation for the possibility that psychological trauma can have devastating consequences comes from the historical development of PTSD. The diagnosis of PTSD was formulated in the 1970s, stimulated by the large number of American soldiers returning from Vietnam with psychological disturbances. The Vietnam conflict was the first major war to occur after psychiatry had systematically organized the taxonomy of mental disorders. As veterans returned with emotional and behavioral symptoms, psychiatry finally had the scientific language to describe their troubles, and PTSD was formally recognized in 1980. This was followed by hundreds of research studies and the development of effective treatments, and the concept of PTSD quickly found stickiness with the public and the media. With the popularity of the PTSD diagnosis, the concept of trauma would eventually become a new type of instrument in the world. Trauma would become a rallying cry that had the power to bring together researchers, clinicians, policymakers, journalists, and other types of stakeholders who were concerned about the safety and healing of all types of victims. Understanding the power of the human belief engine helps us appreciate how this message was so psychologically appealing, despite being so unsupported by the evidence. Traumaville is a name I made up. It is a mythical place, a destination one never quite reaches, because the attraction of it is more the righteous path than the destination. The path is fighting for victims and social justice. The road to Traumaville is driven by the politics of victimhood and involves the suspension of reason. And if one ever reached Traumaville, with all the goals accomplished, there would no longer be anything to fight for. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, life is a journey, not a destination. The road to Traumaville has become the mission path of a science-based political ideology that is trying to shape medicine, psychology, childcare, schools, courts, and other institutions and public policies all over the world. I have spent over 28 years conducting research on PTSD in children and adolescents. I have been the principal investigator on 5 large federal research grants in this field. I have either conducted or supervised the treatment of approximately 200 youths with PTSD. And I have conducted or supervised the assessments of over 700 trauma-exposed youths in both clinical practice and research studies. Much of that work has been with very young children, 6 years and younger. I might have more direct experience with very young children with trauma exposure and PTSD than any clinician in the world. I have devoted my career to understanding trauma reactions so as to help these unfortunate victims. The trouble with trauma is the story of how the idea of psychological trauma appeals to the human mind. It will explain how beliefs about trauma that are wrong, like other missteps of the human mind, spread easily. It is the age-old story of reason versus belief applied to the relatively new body of research on psychological trauma. It is about the unique dilemma faced by nearly all of psychological research, how our willingness to accept research studies that might be on shaky ground and our need to derive meaning in the world is best thought of as the dominance of belief systems. It will borrow some concepts from Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, which explained the spread of social behaviors as contagious epidemics. The Tipping Point described how a few influential individuals can be key to adoption of new behaviors in society, the law of the few, and how small things can make all the difference to separate the memorable from the forgotten, the stickiness factor. But the tipping point described mostly behavior. For example, how individuals started wearing hush puppies again after a long hiatus, and how criminals decreased their bigger criminal behavior when police enforced laws about smaller criminal behavior. It did not describe how the human mind is dominated by belief rather than reason when faced with information in the world that it needs to make sense of, or why it must make sense of information in the first place. The concept of toxic stress, the notion that experiences of extreme psychological stress can cause permanent damage to the structure and function of the brain, was not fully embraced in the early years of PTSD research. The concept had been speculation for approximately 25 years in the early brain imaging studies of Vietnam War veterans with PTSD. Researchers employed it as a hypothesis-generating idea and discussion piece to drive up the excitement level in their journal articles and grant applications. The concept was interesting, but the specific phrase toxic stress did not yet exist. It is an extraordinary notion to claim that one brief experience, or even a number of prolonged experiences, can permanently alter the fundamental sizes of structures in the brain and the network of circuitry that evolved over millions of years and has involved much worse stress, trauma, and suffering than in modern times. There are no comparable theories in medicine that stressful life experiences can cause a cascade of internal physiological processes that permanently alter the size or function of the liver, kidneys, lungs, or heart. The only known methods to create those types of changes are from external chemicals or microorganisms, uncontrolled immune reactions that attack the body, or actual physical injuries. Accordingly, prior to 2010, scientists were understandably cautious about fully endorsing this notion of toxic stress. Then, something unexpected happened. Leading scientists started fully embracing this extraordinary notion as fact. At a scientific conference in 2005, I was sitting in the audience listening to a presentation by one of the leading brain imaging researchers in the world, who stated that based on the brain imaging research, he was absolutely certain that stressful experiences in childhood had caused permanent changes in the brains of the adults whom he studied. His level of certainty shocked me so much that I immediately wrote down what he said so I would not misremember it later. Scientists are usually cautious people in their public statements. They spend their lives testing hypotheses that maybe something is true or maybe something is not true. Even when they find evidence in their experiments that something seems to be true, they usually say that something is probably true, unless they have rock-solid, indisputable, replicated experimental results. They shy away from publicly announcing that they are absolutely certain. I was mystified. I knew the evidence as well as this presenter. Nearly all of the PTSD studies that he referenced were cross-sectional studies. Cross-sectional studies have little to no power to determine what causes what, because subjects are examined at only one point in time. in cross-sectional studies, with only one slice of time, you cannot tell whether the chicken or the egg came first. Everybody knows that. The subjects were always examined after their trauma experiences, meaning that scientists literally had no idea what their brains looked like or how their brains functioned prior to their trauma experiences. It made no sense to me that he would use his respected position in the field to profess certainty about a concept that so obviously lacked rock-solid, indisputable evidence, and about a topic that was so obviously important, alteration of the human brain. He was a lifelong scientist. Wasn't he supposed to be cautious? Over the next 15 years, dozens more leading experts would go on the record with their certain conviction that traumatic stress and other types of psychological stress in childhood permanently damaged brain structures, rewired the functioning of neural circuits, and altered fundamental personality construction. A social movement arose with the end game of trying to influence law and policy. Advocates would convince several major cities, three states, and both chambers of the U.S. Congress to pass laws or resolutions confirming toxic stress as fact. The media would promote the narrative with almost unquestioning enthusiasm. The social movement hit a jackpot of publicity on March 11, 2018, when 60 Minutes featured a report by Oprah Winfrey on trauma-informed care that highlighted as its centerpiece the concept of toxic stress that damages brains, which she called a revolutionary approach that's spreading across the nation. Working on the story was life-changing for her. During a personal interview on 60 Minutes Overtime, she elaborated, "I can say that of all the stories I've ever done in my life, and all the experiences I've ever had, and people I've interviewed, this story has had more impact on me than practically anything I've ever done." Strong stuff from someone who has virtually made a career out of finding inspiration in life. This was followed in 2021 by her book with Dr. Bruce Perry called What Happened to You, which became an instant bestseller. The problem is that none of it has been proven true. The scientific evidence does not support the concept of toxic stress. There have been many fascinating studies that go a long way toward disproving the extraordinary idea that stress damages the brain, and there have been few, if any, properly designed studies that support the idea. The attractiveness of the toxic stress narrative is powerful, but it is ultimately not enlightening. Individuals appear to be attracted to this theory when searching for things they can do to help victims. A more enlightening approach is apparent when one is more ready to accept the way to help victims, maybe to understand them better, as having inherent vulnerabilities that they were born with. After all, the Latin root of the word for doctor, docere, means to teach, not to heal. So how did this happen? Those first researchers who conducted brain imaging studies in Vietnam veterans with PTSD in the 1990s were not trying to start a social movement. Chapter 2 will explain how a plausible scientific hypothesis related to Vietnam War veterans with PTSD, remained unproven, but exploded into a mainstream social policy movement. The official recognition of PTSD as a psychiatric disorder in 1980 has generally been regarded as one of the great accomplishments of psychiatry. Prior to the recognition of PTSD, there had not been a psychiatric diagnosis that described the distinct symptoms of the post-trauma syndrome. The creation of the PTSD diagnosis provided formal recognition to a syndrome that plagues approximately 10% of the population at some point in their lifetime. It gave credibility to the psychological suffering of combat veterans, instead of them being viewed with suspicion as defective soldiers. It spawned an enormous area of research into neurobiology, cognition, and memory. It enabled the development of trauma-specific psychotherapies. But that was not enough for many clinicians. In 1992, psychiatrist Judith Herman, MD, at Harvard University, published a paper that invented a new disorder she called complex PTSD. Complex PTSD, according to Herman, applied only to victims who suffered prolonged and repeated trauma, such as in concentration camps, prisons, coerced prostitution, and chronic childhood abuse. She said that regular PTSD, or as she called it, simple PTSD, was only for victims of briefer forms of trauma, such as war, automobile accidents, natural disasters, time-limited child abuse, horrific injuries, one-time rapes, and so on. She wrote that the diagnostic concepts of the existing psychiatric canon, including simple PTSD, are not designed for survivors of prolonged, repeated trauma and do not fit them well. In the early 1990s, the fourth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-4, was being assembled, which is the official taxonomy of psychiatric disorders used in the United States and many other countries. Herman and some supporters lobbied the DSM committee to formally recognize complex PTSD. The effort was rejected for lack of evidence. About 15 years passed, and as the fifth edition of the DSM was being assembled, supporters repackaged complex PTSD as a childhood disorder. This effort was also rejected for lack of evidence. But then, something remarkable occurred. Years of promotion by supporters seemed to have given complex PTSD greater acceptance, despite the rejections by the DSM. Those rejections may actually have spurned on the supporters, because the DSM was official orthodoxy, and they could view themselves as revolutionary outsiders fighting for their disadvantaged patients. Despite the lack of scientific validity, complex PTSD has now become one of the most influential notions in the field, to the extent that the majority of practicing clinicians now believe that complex PTSD is a real disorder. Herman and her followers are viewed as heroes to many people in the field. Even with the lack of scientific evidence, complex PTSD is recognized by nearly every relevant national organization as either complex PTSD or complex trauma. It is easy to see why individuals who are not researchers tend to believe in the narrative of complex PTSD. They believe that complex PTSD stands for something that resonates with their view of the world, which is relatively more important than details like evidence. Clinicians will tell you that complex PTSD just makes sense to them, and that is enough for them. But none of that explains why researchers and national organizations have embraced it. Chapter 3 will explain how a proposed disorder that has none of the traditional medical evidence needed to recognize it as a real syndrome has come to be believed by so many experts in the trauma field. The full embrace of the toxic stress model and complex PTSD is similar to other episodes where science crashed into other motivations of human nature. The cosmological, and ideological motivations of beliefs versus evidence.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?